All right, guys, we're going to go ahead and get started. I'm Pastor Michael Davis of Anchored Hope Church out in Troy. Planted the church 4 years ago out of New Life Church in O'Fallon and have been out there ever since. I'm also the leader of the multiplication value on the Missouri District. So thank you guys for coming. We're going to talk today about vision. Vision is super, super important because without a clear-cut vision and understanding of what we're doing in front of our people, in front of our churches, in front of the people who are following us and are part of our team, there's a lot of people who get lost, a lot of inconsistency, a lot of people don't know why we're doing what we're doing. Vision really shows us where we're headed. It gives us an idea of what the future is going to look like, what we're trying to achieve, what we're trying to do. Vision provides motivation and inspires us to keep going. It helps us to move through obstacles when they come up. It provides focus. And it gives us purpose. Vision is super, super important. And one of my goals today that I hope that you're able to take back to your company, to your job, to your board or your leadership team or even your ministry is tools to help you be able to go back and go, you know what? Here are the questions we need to ask in order to articulate what it is we're doing. Why is it we exist? What it is we're trying to accomplish? And so we're going to go through some of those things. With vision, I think there are five important questions that we have to ask ourselves. Five important questions that we have to go through and be able to answer very, very clearly, have them written down, have them to where somebody asks us a question, we're able to give them a solid, short, concise answer. So the first question that we've got to ask is this. What are we doing? What is our overall intention? That's all about mission, right? What is our mission? What are we trying to do here? What is our overall intention? What are we trying to get done? We've got to answer that first and foremost, what our mission is. Now, I'll say this about churches. I said this at a pastor's advance a couple months ago, and I'll say it again. When it comes to mission and when it comes to churches, we try to make it a whole lot more complicated than it really is. Okay? You look at churches' mission statements or you ask a church what their mission is. A lot of them, they can give you this long, very, you know, theological answer with a lot of fancy words. But the bottom line of every church or every Christian's mission statement is very simple as this. To make disciples. Right? Can we all agree about that?
Yes. Yep.
That's what Jesus said to do, right? Go and make disciples. Now, there's a lot of other stuff with that, you know, baptizing, teaching them, right? But the bottom line is, make disciples. Honestly, every church and every town of every community should have the same mission statement. We're all out to make disciples. Now, how we do that, how we go about that, those things can be totally different. But that's the whole purpose of our church, is to make disciples. That's the point of your youth ministry. That's the point of your children's ministry. That's the point of your adult ministry. The end goal, the thing we are trying to accomplish in the end, is making disciples. So that's pretty short, sweet, concise. We all can get that. We all can agree with that. Now, where we go beyond that is what makes us start to look unique, what starts to make us look different, what starts to shape what we do, what we put our money in, and other stuff. The second question we have to ask ourselves is, why are we doing it? Our values. What is our motivation? What are our convictions? Why are we doing what we're doing? We know what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to make disciples. But why are we doing what we're doing? I love watching a show called Restaurant Impossible. Any of you guys ever seen this show, Restaurant Impossible, with Robert Irvine? I think it's on the Food Network. Robert Irvine, this big buff British guy who was part of the British Navy, he's a chef. He goes into these failing restaurants and he tries to flip them in 2 days. And he gives them a whole makeover and all the new menu and all this stuff. But he also really tries to change the owner, tries to change the way they're thinking about it, trying to change who they are and what they're trying to accomplish, right? But every episode, if you watch close enough, Robert Irvine kind of asks them the same question every single time. So why'd you get in the restaurant business? Why did you get in the restaurant business? That's one of the first questions he always asks. Why did you get in the restaurant business? And 8 times out of 10, they give this answer that leaves him just shaking his head at him. And it's usually, well, we thought it would be cool, or we thought it would be fun. That's the answer they give. Not I was passionate about food or the community needed it or anything. It's just this random couple, this random family that didn't like their job or, you know, thought it would be really fun or thought it would be really cool to open up a restaurant. And so they did it. And Robert Irvine, he shakes his head at that because those are all the wrong reasons to open up a restaurant. That explains about 80% of the problem here of why the restaurant is failing. Because these people are doing it not because their heart is in it or not because the community needed it, but just because they thought it would be cool, right? A lot of our churches, a lot of our people, a lot of our ministries, we're just doing because we thought it would be fun or we thought it would be cool. And that's as far as we've ever thought about why we do it. We have to think a little bit deeper about why we do what we do and what the convictions are and why we're motivated to do it. Because we can't do ministry and we can't pour our funds into stuff just because we think it would be fun or just because we think it would be cool. We have to look deeper to that, about why we're doing what we're doing. What are our core convictions? What it is we're trying to accomplish? It doesn't help you accomplish your mission. I'm sorry, if it doesn't help you accomplish your mission, then it is nothing more than a distraction and a way to lose money. Okay? If it does not help you accomplish your mission, your overall intention, then it is just a distraction. It's just something that's going to get in the way. It's going to be something you pour your money into, and it's not going to accomplish anything. I have a buddy. He's a pastor in Nebraska, and he called me. He just became a lead pastor, and he's at a new church, and he called me, and he said, I'm trying to figure out something. I think that there's something needs to be changed here, but I don't know exactly what it is. He said, I came into this new church, and at Christmas time, we spend $500. $500. All of the Sunday school classes get together, and we make bags of candy, like Christmas candy and stuff, and we put a little bow on them, and we wrap them up, and we make this pretty little gift. We spend $500 on candy and stuff for these bags and these treats, and then they just hand them to each other. I said, what? He said, yeah. He goes, we take a whole Sunday, we cancel all Sunday school, all the Sunday school classes, they meet in the fellowship room, they make candy bags, and then they turn to their neighbor and go, here you go, Merry Christmas. He said, is something off about that to you? I said, yeah, that's $500, man. I don't think in the church budget you should have a candy party budget for one another. I mean, what in the world, you know? And he's like, well, how do I explain? He's like, they love it. They love it. They love doing it. And I know it shouldn't be there. I know we should cancel it. I know it's a poor use of our funds because we don't have a whole lot of funds. But they love it. How do I explain it to them? I said, you explain it to them by explaining that there's no reason behind it. You don't just look at them and say, well, that's a dumb idea. You tell them, okay, you take them. Get them on this path with you. Get them thinking the same way. Ask them the question, how does this help us accomplish our mission of making disciples? So we went to a meeting, and he said, I have a question about this. I'm just trying to think through this. I want us to all be on the same page. I don't want to come in here and be authoritative and just shut this down. Tell me, how does this help us accomplish making disciples? And somebody nailed it on the head. They said, well, it doesn't. It's just fun. And he said, okay, I get it. Does anybody here think we should spend $500 on candy for ourselves if it's not helping us reach anybody in the community or bringing anybody to the kingdom of God? And everybody in unison was like, well, of course not, we shouldn't. We need to cancel this, pastor. He said, you know what, I was thinking the same too, right? See, it's a lot easier that way. Helps everybody be on the same team. It helps everybody discover the same thing. If we all think together, why are we doing what we're doing? Then we understand what we need to cut, what's not important, what we don't need to dump our resources or our funds or our money into or spend our energy doing. When we go back to our core convictions and our motives for doing what we're doing, we discover what it is we actually should be doing. Here's the other thing it does too. It greatly, greatly motivates us to do things well and to do things for the right reason. Our church is a church we planted in Troy 4 years ago. We meet in a school auditorium in town. It's a huge auditorium. It fits 400 people. It's way too big, way too much space for where we're at starting out. So there's two side sections and there's one huge middle section. So when we started, I'm a big community guy. I want a good community feel in the worship area. There's a reason for that. And so I told them, here's what we're going to do. I don't want everybody spread out because we're going to start out small. So I don't want everybody spread out. I want everybody to feel like we're family, like we're close together, like there's a community feel. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to rope off the side sections. I want a rope that goes down that kind of lets people know, don't sit in those sections. I want everybody sitting in the middle section so we're all close, so we can all see each other, so we're all feeling like a family. So week in and week out, when you're setting up and you're tearing down at a church, it gets exhausting, right? It gets tiring, right? And everybody's all motivated at first. Everybody gets it, but then a couple months go by and everybody goes, do we have to put the ropes out today? Should we do this? Really, what's the point, right? And so two Sundays go by where I see the ropes aren't out. And I just let it go. I just wait to see what happens. But I notice it, right? Two Sundays go by. So I understand what's going on. And then the one Sunday that I knew would come comes. We have a guest come, and what does she do? She goes and sits in the side section because she doesn't know. And everybody else sits in the middle section, and she's off on the side by herself. Now, God gave me a good partner. My wife gets up, goes and sits next to her. She's fine. Right. Thank God for good wives. But afterwards, I pulled the first impressions team together, and I go, okay, did anybody see what happened today that went wrong? They said, yeah, the guests came over there, and they went and sat by themselves. I said, yes, they did. Does anybody know why that happened? I think it's because we didn't put the ropes out. Yes, it is. And do you see why we put the ropes out? The ropes are important. Why? Because when guests come, we want them to feel like they are one of us, like they are a part of us, like they are a part of the family. If we are not convicted that our guests are important and that they are our number one priority every Sunday, and that we need to make their first visit top-notch, 5 stars, like they feel like they're welcomed and they are loved and they know exactly where to sit and what is going on, and it's all clearly communicated. Do you see how we could potentially lose somebody just because we did not set a rope out? Yes, Pastor, I understand it. That's why the ropes are so important. Yes. See, when we understand the reason why behind the what, things become very clear. All of a sudden, your people serving alongside of you understand we have to do this well. We have to give our best effort. We have to put our best foot forward. We have to make sure every detail, every rope, every light, every door, every sign is up and it's clearly communicated. Because when we don't, we lose people. And in our business of making disciples, people matter, right? Yes. We have to go back to our core convictions. We have to understand why we do what we do. The second question we have to ask is this: how are we doing it? Strategy, right? How are we doing it? We want people to be able to get from point A to point B. How are we doing it? Looking at someone and saying, you know what? I know what you need to do. You need to become a disciple of Jesus. That's what you need to do? Do it. That is like looking at my toddler and saying, I want you to pee in the potty and stop peeing in your pants. All right? Just do it. Is that going to work? No, it is not. I've tried it, all right? Many different tones and many different languages with many other things, but it has not worked thus far, okay? We do it so many times, though, to people who are in our churches, to people who come into our ministries. Just do it. What does it look like to be a good teacher in our children's department? Just be it. What does it look like to be a good teen sponsor? Just be it. Just do it. You know, what does it look like to be a member of this church and to participate and to be a Christian? Just do it. We expect people to just come and just do it. But here's the thing. We have to draw them a map. We have to have a strategy of how to get them from point A to point B. One of the biggest reasons why people never grow or never get involved is because, one, nobody ever invited them to, and two, nobody ever showed them how. Think about it long enough. Nobody ever invited them, and nobody ever showed them how. But if we would learn how to invite people to be a part of it, to do it, and then show them how and what it looks like, people would be gung-ho. Who wouldn't want to be a part of it? I mean, if you explain your motives and reason and why it's so important and why it's so great, and you explain the mission, then why in the world wouldn't somebody want to be a part of what we're doing in our churches? Why wouldn't somebody want to teach kids? Why wouldn't somebody want to be part of the youth ministry? Why wouldn't somebody want to be on the First Impressions team? If you explain it well enough and why it matters and why it's important, and then you give them a strategy of how it's done, well then, simple, right? But sometimes we lose the in-between. We need to have a strategy. We need to have a plan of how to get people from point A to point B. Our plan has to be clear, and it has to be concise. Something that I heard Andy Stanley, a pastor that I follow, say once, he said, think steps, not programs. What steps do you want people to take when they walk into your church, when they walk into your ministry, when they walk into your, you know, your Girl Scouts, your Boy Scouts? They want to be involved. They're there. They're interested. They're there because they're interested. So what is it you want them to do? What steps can they take? Our churches, our pastors, our leadership teams, we need to be able to have a concise strategy for when somebody brand new walks in through that door. What is step one for them when they walk through that door? When they walk in, they're interested, they're there. Okay, so what if I get saved today and I give my life to Christ? What's the next step? What if I really enjoyed today and I'm very curious? I don't know if I'm all in. I don't know if I want a relationship with Christ, but I'm curious. What's my next step? Oh, I love this place. I want to get involved. I want to serve. What's my next step? Who do I talk to? Who do I email? Who do I go to? What's supposed to happen? What's the strategy here? What's the game plan? What's the map? What road do I need to take? We have to be able to communicate that very, very clearly. What is it that we want people to do? In our church, I have a map. And it's not something we advertise or have posters up at the front, but I have a map, and my leadership team knows it. My staff knows that map, and it's a funnel system. And I could take somebody from an unbeliever, never been to church before, and I can take them from step one all the way to the very end of where I want them to get them. And I have a list of what I want, where I want them to get them. I want them to be on the leadership team. I want them to have served. I want them to be able to. I want them to have been discipled and be able to disciple others. I have this whole list of where I want to get them. And I have a map of how I want to get them there. And everything we do fits in that map for a reason. There's a why behind what we do. From small groups to discipleship groups to serving on a team, all of it is a part of the map. And it doesn't matter if somebody comes in as a brand new person who's never, doesn't believe in God or doesn't want to have anything to do with God, or a family that moves into town and has been a Christian or a Nazarene their entire life. I have a place where I can fit them, where they go, hi, we're here, what do we do? Here you go. This is where we would. This is what we would have you do. We're taking in 11 members tomorrow at Anchored Hope Church. 11 members. That's a pretty good for a church starting out to take in 11 new Nazarenes. You know how we did that? We had them in a process. We're not processing them out, but we had a strategy. And from day one when they came, we had them a part of that. And then we came to a point where we had a conversation with them about membership and what it means to be a member, and they've taken a class. All a part of our strategy, all a part of our plan. What's your plan? What's your map at your church, and your children's ministry, and your youth ministry, and your First Impressions ministry? What is your strategy, and what is your map? Next question, I don't know what number one. The next question is this: when are we successful? Measurements. When are we successful? Let me ask you this. At your church, what do you count as a win? What is a win to you? How do you know today was a good day? Today we had some victory. What you measure communicates to people what you value. That's why it's so important. What you celebrate, what you say yeah about in front of your people, to your people, shows what you value, what is most important to you. In just this last 6 months, became a coach at a CrossFit gym because I was already going there all the time like an addict, and I thought I should work here and get paid to do this. So I did it. So I'm a coach now at a CrossFit gym in St. Charles, and so I'm on staff there, and I coach. CrossFit is a very interesting community. I've actually learned a ton about what the church should look more like by looking at the CrossFit community, but that's another conversation for another time. But at our CrossFit CrossFit box is what they call their gyms, boxes. At our box, we've got a lots of different people, wide scope of people. We've got this guy named Ryan, okay? Ryan is strong as a horse, okay? Guy can lift 400 pounds over his head. He's got the top numbers in the gym. He's just jacked. He's ripped. You know, he takes his shirt off just as soon as he walks in the door. It's disgusting, okay? Now, we have this other woman, Mary. Mary's 70 years old. Mary comes to our box and works out as well. And we scale all the workouts down for her. She does the same workout as Ryan. It just looks a little bit differently, and she's not, you know, lifting 400 pounds over her head. But she's 70 years old, and quite honestly, she's just trying to keep out of the nursing home, right? They keep doing physical tests for her, and she's going through this in order to stay out of a nursing home. So last week, we have a week where we do some testing and stuff. Ryan deadlifts 505 pounds. Woo! Good job, Ryan, right? Ryan deadlifts 505 pounds. Mary has been working very, very hard for the last couple months. Mary took a sled that had a rope, a 15-foot rope attached to it, and she slid it across the gym floor. Now, at our gym and in the CrossFit community, they have these things they call PRs, okay? PRs are personal records. That's what we celebrate, and that's what we talk about all the time. What's your PR? We're shooting for a PR here. Your personal record. So Ryan last week, he deadlifts 505 pounds. Mary, she's been working for months. She pulls a sled 15 feet across this floor. It's about a 60-pound sled. Guess who we wrote a Facebook post about, put their picture up, and celebrated on our Facebook. Look what they did. Can you guess which person it was?
Mary.
What? Ryan deadlifted 505 pounds, people. Why in the world would we say, yeah, Mary, and write a Facebook post and put a video up on it for everybody to see? You know why? Because the CrossFit community is all about PRs. Ryan does that like every week. Big deal, Ryan. Whatever. You're jacked. Go take your shirt off somewhere. But Mary has been working hard. Mary is working hard. She put the work in. She came in extra days. She did extra work. And that was a huge feat for her. That was a huge PR for her. And that is what we celebrate. We don't celebrate the best. We don't celebrate the most weight. We don't celebrate the strongest. We celebrate the people who are trying their hardest and who are doing their personal best and are seeing transformation because of it. Our church, our denomination, needs to take a lesson out of this playbook, because what we celebrate shows what we value. A lot of times you hear about the church with the most butts in the seats, the church who gave the most money or raised the most money. But if our mission is to make disciples, is really the most butts in the seat what we should celebrate? Is how much money we raised what we should celebrate? Or should it be about discipleship making? About lives being changed? Because let me tell you something, I could think of about 100 really cool ways to get a lot of butts in seats, but that's not the business I'm in. I'm in the business of changing lives. I'm in the business of making disciples. And those are the stories we should probably celebrate the most. In your church, what is it you celebrate? What is it you cheer for? What is it you get people up and commend them for? Because whatever that is, that communicates to your people, that's what we value. That is what is most important to us. I shared a story at my church a few months ago I have a woman. She's got five kids. She comes to our church. Her and her kids, they live in the low-income apartments behind our church. And her and her kids, they walk to church. I call them the little ducklings because here's mommy duck. And all the kids just follow in a line behind her. And they literally, for some reason, line up like smallest to oldest. And the oldest son, the fifth grader's in the back, and he just watches them all. And they just walk across the street like little ducks. But anyway, she wrote her first tithe check about a month after she came, or gave her first tithe. $2.38. And next to it, she wrote, "All that I have." $2.38. So I take that, go home, I see it, I cry. Yeah. But then the next Sunday I get up, and before we take the offering, I tell everybody, I explain every Sunday why we're doing what we're doing, why we're taking the offering. I always tell new people, hey, there's no cover charge for being here, but this is why we're doing what we're doing. I say that every week. This is why we do what we do. And I use that story, and I said, I want you guys to know there's somebody here in this room that last week tithed for the first time. And this is how much they tithed. And next to it, they wrote this note. And I told my people, I want you to know, I don't care how much you give. That's between you and God. All I ask is you give all that you have to Him and trust Him with it. My people understand tithe very well because of stories like that. Because that is what we celebrate. Because those are the things we honor, and those are the things we talk about on a regular basis. That communicates to people what we value. When are you successful as a team? What is it all about? I had a situation a couple months ago too. You know, we're a church plant. People get there early to set up and tear down, so it's not uncommon. It's a small space. It's basically an auditorium, a big hallway with lockers, and then a big open lobby type area. So we have a lot of kids that get there early with their folks and stuff for set up and tear down. And, you know, they can get a little rambunctious. Kids get bored, right? You know, so kids are running up and down trying to bang into lockers and stuff and break into places and all kinds of things. You know, they're curious, right? So one of my children's workers comes up to me and goes, "We need to do something about this. We need to get these kids in line. We need to teach them respect. That auditorium is basically a sanctuary. We need to, they can't be running in there. They can't be playing hide and seek. They're laughing and they're being loud." I said, "Okay, let me ask you something. What's more important to you? That kids come and they learn about God and they leave with a smile on their face, or that they come here and they behave well? What matters most to you?" "Well, I think it should be both." No. But see, we're not going to get both. Not going to get both, okay? Because I can tell you, that kid that you have a problem over there with, number one, he's got a learning disability. Number two, he doesn't have a dad. Number three, this is the only place where he has friends. And so, yeah, he gets here and he gets a little bored, and he starts playing with all the other kids. But he's here and he's learning about God. So what would you want me to do? What's most important to you? I can sit him down and I can give him rules and I can get stern with him, or I can let him be here and let him learn about God. Which one do you want me to do? Because I know I'm not going to get both. So you tell me, which one do you want me to do?" She said, "Let him be." I said, "Yeah, let's let him be." See, what do we measure as successful? What matters to us most? Because here's the thing, there's going to be some give and take. Because guess what? When we're in the business of people, guess what? Every church is the same. Imperfect place with imperfect people. It's no different than Walmart down the street, folks. Yeah. Imperfect place, imperfect people. What's important to us? What's a win for us that day? We've got to be able to communicate that. We've got to be able to communicate that to our teams. We've got to be able to communicate that to our teachers, to our people. We've got to be able to clarify the win for people. Not just for our volunteers, but for the people in our church too. We've got to be able to clarify people, you know, if we've got this strategy, this map of where we want them to go. I always tell people, people are their own worst enemies. Most people who are going to walk in your church, they're going to know. They know when they walk in the door that they've got room to grow, that they're imperfect. And many of their imperfections, many of their things, their hang-ups, they feel guilty about. They feel bad about. I caught a girl a couple weeks ago I didn't even know she smoked, but she was smoking in the back. And she saw me, and she... I was like, don't hold that smoke in too long, honey. You're going to blow up. Let it out, you know? And then she just slowly... So she threw it down. She said, I'm sorry, Pastor. I'm so sorry. I said, Randy, what are you sorry about? She goes, I know I shouldn't do this. I'm trying to stop. I said, I know you are. I know. I'm glad you're here, though. I'm glad you're here. That's my win, that she's here, that she's there, that she's listening. That's the win. And I got to give some give and take about that. And I understand. Now, do I want her smoking? No. Am I going to preach and tell her, stop smoking? Yeah. But she's there. And it's not a hang up. I'm not going to turn people away because of their clothes. I'm not going to turn people away because of their hang ups, their things. Hey, we're all imperfect people and it's an imperfect place. It's okay. Some of yours, I can see you blowing smoke out. Some of yours, it's in your heart. And I can't see it. And it's not as identifiable. But guess what Jesus said? Sin is sin. And in my church, that's a thing. Sin is sin. You could be gay or you could be having sex outside of marriage. In my eyes, sin is sin. I don't care. I'm not going to have your hang-ups be a big deal. My win is that you're here. My win is that you're learning about God. It's the Holy Spirit's job to change people, not mine. So it's a win anytime I can get an opportunity to let that Holy Spirit speak and that Holy Spirit do His job. My job is to get out of the way. And not let my hang-ups become hang-ups for them and a barrier between them and God, right? Mm-hmm. That all is a part of our measurements. It's all a part of when we're successful and when we're not. The last thing is this. Where is God taking us? Mountaintops and milestones. Where is God taking us? I think in front of all of our people, our churches, our people serving in our ministries, we've got to paint for them a picture of where it is we want to go. I think we should all sit down. I've sat down with my leadership team and done this, and I've sat down with other companies and people, and I've asked them, describe to me your mountaintop. Your mountaintop experience. What I mean, let's say everything works out perfectly. Let's say that you accomplish your mission, your strategy is great, your measurements are just firing, and you're just getting win after win after win after win. What's your mountaintop experience? Let's just act like nothing bad is going to happen. What's your mountaintop experience? What does that look like? We've got to have that picture because we got to have something to shoot for. We got to have that picture because we got to have something to strive for, somewhere we all want to go. We've taken six people who met in a Troy firehouse, and on a good Sunday, we'll have 90 people, but as a church, we're probably a church of a little over 100, right? So we're doing well. And now we're at that point where we're looking, you know, what are we going to do? Do we need a building? Why do we need a building? You know, what are we going to do with that building? Do we need to buy land? Do we need to build a building? Whatever, right? There's going to be a next step. But instead of just talking about that next step, I'm in front of them talking about the mountaintop. And I've explained to them my vision. I've told them, guys, here's what I would love to do. Here's what would be the coolest thing on earth for our community. Why I think we're here is, you know what? How cool would it be to have a facility that's like a strip mall, and it's like a church, but it's like a bajillion other things. What if we had a haircut place, a salon, where haircuts and discipleship were taking place? And then next to that, we had a coffee shop where small groups, and there's a business in town that's struggling. We could pull that coffee shop into our church, let them rent that, let them run that, but we get to use the equipment too, and we have this awesome facility. And then we had a CrossFit gym where we weren't just discipling and changing people's hearts, but we were changing people's bodies, and we helping them get their health and their mind right so they could get their heart right as well. And then, you know, and then we have like some kind of worship facility on the side. You know what I mean? But I've explained to them and they're like, Pastor, that's like a multi-million dollar. What are you kidding me? We can't do that now. No, we can't do that now. Are you insane? You guys barely pay me. What are you talking about? We got to take care of that first. But here's the thing, though. But that's the mountaintop. Think about if we could get there. Oh, that'd be cool, Pastor. How cool would it be to be able to do that? How awesome would it be able to have something like that? That would be so cool. Okay, all right, so let's work for it.
Let's do it. Let's work for it. Let's shoot for it. Let's do well every single Sunday. Every single Sunday. Let's make sure the ropes are out. Let's make sure the lights are on. Let's just make sure everybody got their name tags on. Let's shoot for that, because guess what? Every baby step we take is going to get us closer to there. And it's okay. We're going to have, you know, trip ups. We're going to hit potholes. We're going to have stuff happen. But that's okay. But if we know what we're shooting for, we can start to reach for it. So let's reach for it. And every day we'll get a little closer. Every day it'll get a little bit better. I think everybody's got to know what that mountaintop is. A lot of times in churches, it's just people walk in, guests walk in, new people walk in, and it just doesn't seem like there's a whole lot going on, right? Just seems like things are dead. Just seems like just another Sunday where we're just there and we're just sitting and we're just listening. Why is that? I think sometimes it's because we don't know where we're going. I think it's because sometimes we don't have any dreams. We don't have any mountaintops that we want to shoot for. You know, I'm the multiplication guy, right? So I got to talk about church planting at some point. You know, my goal would be that we would just keep planting churches. This is not the only church I plan to plant. I want to plant more churches. Now that's, I don't know how long down the road, but I want to see it happen. I want to see many Anchored Hopes. It's like the Walmart. I just want to see every town get an Anchored Hope. You know what I mean? I'm shooting for that. I believe in that. But I talk to pastors all the time and I ask them, why haven't you planted a church? And they're like, it's just not going to happen. It's just not realistic. It's just not possible. I mean, that's just, oh, but yeah, okay, I get it. It's not possible now. But like, you've just shut down even thinking about it, even dreaming about it. If you had a mountaintop, if you had a dream in front of you, something that everybody could strive for and reach for, don't you think you'd get moving just a little bit? Don't you think you'd get a little excited? I mean, I'd much rather walk into a place with a huge imagination and a lot of creativity and everybody working their tail off to get there than a place that's just said, well, this is where we're going to be. This is what we're going to have. I guess we're just done. Put a fork in us, right? I mean, think if you did that with your marriage. What a bland marriage, right? Think if you did that with your kids. What a bland idea and dream for your kids, right? We don't do that with anything else. We shouldn't do that for church either. Because guess what? The church is the bride of Christ, right? The church is the bride. It deserves to be imagined for, creative with. We should hope for its best, not be settled for its in-between, right? So we need to know what those mountaintops are, but we also need to know, too, what those milestones are. You know, okay, the mountaintop's way there. What are the milestones in between? What are the milestones that are within your reach that you could attain? You know, maybe your milestone, I know for you know, Dustin's church, it was to get their church debt-free, and they did it. But they had to think of that milestone first, to get debt-free, to get away from this loan so we could free up money for other ministries and other things and other projects for our community. What are those milestones that are attainable that you could start to reach for now that will help you to get closer to your mountaintop? In each of your ministries, what's your milestone? Maybe you only got two teachers and they're just rotating every week right now. And you're like, you know what would be really cool? What would be really cool is if we had like 9 teachers. We had a team of teachers who were doing this and one was doing this and we were doing this. And you're going, oh yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah, sure. We've got like 18 people in the church right now. 9 of them are not going to be in children's ministry. Okay. Yeah. Now. But yeah, if you just go, yeah, well, that's how it's going to be. Well, then guess what, folks? That's how it's always going to be. But what are you reaching for? We can get one more. What if we got one more? Well, let's shoot for that. Let's pray about that. Let's work for that. Let's ask God for that. I think sometimes God's going, you know, what's possible is endless. It's just you're not asking for it. You're not being creative. You're not imagining. You're not thinking it up. And if you're not going to think it up, and if it's not important to you, and you don't know why you're the why behind the what of what you're doing, why should I entrust you with more? Because I think you might just drop the ball. I've got to do my due diligence, and I've got to think through this, and I've got to be organized, and I've got to be creative, and I've got to be inspired. And if I believe the Holy Spirit can do anything in my life, then I believe the Holy Spirit can do anything in our churches, right?
Yes.
So I have to show that by dreaming big, by thinking of milestones, and thinking of what the mountaintop actually looks like.
I'm going to give you guys, we've got some time here. We got about 15, 20 minutes or so. If you guys want to ask me any questions, I think some of this stuff happens best in like conversations or clarification or any of that. But what questions do you might you have for me about the five questions we just talked about the vision framework?
Vision for the strip mall. Did you say salon, gym, coffee? You said something else.
Yeah. Well, here's my idea. I think churches pay utilities and have big enough buildings, but they only get used one day a week for a couple hours.
Right?
So my thing that I have thought of that is my dream and vision, and that I think would be a good steward of whatever God blesses me with, is that it'd be a facility used in many ways. And it wouldn't just be a church. I believe the future of the church and what it's going to take to be able to be a viable church is to be a hub for the community, to be used by the community.
Yes.
And so my dream and my vision is to create a hub for the community to where people could come for multiple needs and try to discover what those are, or even use or partner with local businesses that are hurting. Like I said, the coffee shop. I got a coffee shop lady who I've just kind of picked her. There's three coffee shops that opened up in town, and I just kind of picked her and went, I'm your guy, right? So if I have any kind of event or anything that has to do with coffee, I try to go partner with her. I believe in having partners in the community, and so I go try to partner with her. But she's a great lady. She's really good to us, but she's got a huge overhead. Why can't I not invite her into my, if I build a coffee shop, something that I'm going to use? A lot of churches build spaces for coffee shops and stuff, but again, it only gets used for a couple hours. What if I pulled her in and said, here you go, I'm going to cut your overhead. You know what I mean? You come in, use my building, you and I get to be partners and friends, and I, you know, when you close up shop, I get to use it for small groups that night. Why should I not look at ways to partner with people in my community and use our resources that way and be smart and help each other out and share? I think that's what is going to make the church more viable in the future, because building $2 million buildings is just, it's becoming less and less likely, and it's just becoming impossible. But if we built more community hubs where there are partners and people sharing costs and stuff, I think that would be terrific. And so that's my mountaintop, you know, and I don't know, you know, what we're looking at, how do we get there? What steps do we take? But we know where we want to get, you know, we know what's attainable, and we know whatever steps we take, we've got to keep that in the picture. So, yeah.
You talked about your strategy and how to get people from plan A to plan B.
Yeah.
So you're starting out, and you come into the church. Do you assign a mentor to that person or to that family?
Yep. So I'll tell you what I do. And if you steal it, it's copyrighted. No, I'm just kidding. So,
want to steal it?
Yeah. So here's what I do. I have a, I call it the funnel. All right. I've got this big circle, and then it's circles that just get smaller and smaller and smaller, because we all know it starts out easy, and then we get to the more committed, and the more committed are always the small. But that's okay, because if I build the core of the most committed, then the outside grows with it, right? And then there's more room for everybody to start entering in, right? So what I try to do, and what my strategy is they're an outsider right now, right? They come in and they feel like an outsider. The first thing I want them to do is just feel like they're part of a community. I think that's even the title of my first circle. It's just community. So I just want to get them to where they want to be at church every week. I want them to feel like they're not a stranger. I want them to feel like they're part of our family. I want them to feel like they belong. If I hit them too hard with discipleship or this or that or any finger waving, I'm going to scare them off. So first thing I want them to do is feel like they're part of the family. So what we have at our church is community groups. Community groups meet once a month, and here's the rules. Get there, eat together, say a prayer. It's as simple as that. No Bible study, no teaching, no talks of, you know, lust or anything. You know, I've been to those churches. I remember when I went to college, I went to my first small group. Okay, today we're going to talk about pornography. All right, well, I'm out. You know, I don't want to be here. This is awkward. This is weird. I don't know you people. You know, I'm not going to share anything with you. I'm out. So my thing is just get them plugged in. Get them a part of the community. Let them have a time to understand our DNA and who we are. Past that, I look at learning and serving. Okay, so they've been here long enough. Where can I plug them in? They like being here. Now let's make them a part of what we're doing. Let's make them feel like they're on the team. So I just had a conversation with my first impressions guy the other day. We do 3-month serve schedules, and he said, hey, the so-and-sos have been here for a couple months now. They're really enjoying this. They're really liking it. What do you think about putting them on the greeting team? That's a great first place. They're a friendly person. They like being here. They can shake a hand. Awesome. Yes, get them plugged in. So I move them to that circle, right? And then we also have what we call learning environments, but what many of you probably just think of as small groups, but I call them learning environments, just places where we learn. We do learning environments. We read book. Oh, right now we're reading a book called Toxic Charity, but the way we're discussing it is we're doing the discussion part on Google Hangouts, because a lot of people, you know, if you go to an hour-long small group, it's actually a two-hour-long small group. You know that, right? Because you got to drive 30 minutes to get there, and then you're there an hour, and then you got to drive 30 minutes back, and then like kids are going insane and stuff, right? I know how that is as a parent. So we're doing one on Google Hangouts where it's at 8 o'clock, mainly after people have already eaten and put their kids to bed, and they pop up online and we all talk on Google Hangouts and have an hour-long discussion. Then when you hang up, guess what? You're home. You know what I mean? So I don't care if people are in their pajamas or what they're doing, like they can have a conversation. And so we do learning environments like that. And some of them we do face-to-face, some of them we get together and watch videos, but they're for a short time, and it's just simply a place where we learn together. So I try to get them into where they're learning and they're serving. Past that, I get into the discipleship phase. And our discipleship groups, we call them fight clubs because we're contending for our faith. Now, fight clubs are different from learning environments. Everybody knows this, so you may not have thought of this, but this is how it goes. It's small groups. Here's what everybody does. Well, here's my opinion. You? Well, here's my opinion. Okay. Well, here's my opinion. Okay, does anybody have any prayer requests? Well, I have a neighbor. And let me tell you about them. Yeah. Pastor, we need to pray for them. Okay, good. Well, we all just shared our opinion. We all, right? Small groups, we all know that. That's the environment of small groups, is we all just kind of go around and share what we think. Fight clubs are different. Fight clubs are what Jesus did with his disciples and what the 12 did with the rest. It's one person, and here's the thing. I'm the discipler, you're the discipled. We're not going to sit here and I'm going to share my thoughts on this, and you're going to share your thoughts on this. I am discipling you, and this is one-on-one. And I have a group of guys that I meet with, so I do 3 guys at the same time, and I disciple them. And, you know, here's the other thing about small group. If we do a book series and week one or chapter one is on love, well, if you don't get it after week one, guess what? Week two, we're going to go talk about something else. So sorry if you didn't get it after week one. We're moving on in the book, right? Fight clubs, we're not like that. Fight clubs, we're going to talk about this until we get past this. We're going to talk about this until we surrender it to Christ and we get some transformation and some growth out of it. So see, it's totally different. Now see, that takes a very committed person, right? More committed than the people just coming to church, more than the people in the learning environment, right? So it's getting smaller, but we're growing. I'm getting them closer. Now, the whole point of the fight club or the discipleship group is to get them to be able to disciple somebody else. So when they grow past that and they transform, now they're ready to disciple somebody else. Well, now I'm multiplying, right? Because I started out doing one with a couple guys. Well, now those guys are trained. Now they're doing some. So we've gone to where we've got like 12 people in Fight Club now. When a year ago or a year and a half ago, we only had 3 people in Fight Club. We're moving, right? Now, naturally, when those people become discipled and disciplers, they also become leaders. Those are the people I look at as being candidates for my leadership team or my board, right? So also the people who usually end up serving and leading a ministry or being my key people. So I'm moving people along, you know, and along there, there comes a membership. There comes a point in membership where I talk to them about that and different things like that. So I move people along that way, and that's my strategy. And, you know, I think we see a lot of cool stuff happen with that. And it's, I believe in high invitation and high challenge. And so I take people where they're at. And there's a lot of times I approach people, I go, you know what, I think you're ready for this. You know what I mean? Have you thought about baptism? Have you thought about this? And I always look at people and I can kind of tell where they are in the road. And I have to go to them because it's, and this culture is changing. It's very rare to have people come up to you and go, I want to be baptized. I want to be a member of the church, right? A lot of people don't understand that stuff, or they don't understand the purpose or the importance about it. But if I can explain the why behind it, if I can explain how it helps them become a disciple of Christ and why it's important, then they get it. And then if I have a plan for it to happen, and I have a plan for when it's going to happen, then they can get, and I invite them to be a part of it, well, then most likely, most of the time, they do it. You know what I mean? They're like, oh, okay, I get it. Yeah, I want to do that. I want to be a part of that because I want to be more like Jesus. That's why I'm here. That's why I've stuck around. So show me how. Let's do this. And it gets them moving along, gets them going. So that's my map.
Yeah. Why are you going bike clubs?
Because we're contending for the faith.
Are you supposed to talk about them?
No, don't ever talk about Fight Club. No, actually, it's funny. My soon-to-be 3-year-old, the other day, my wife was going to Fight Club, and she goes, "Mommy, where are you going?" She goes, "Going to Fight Club." She goes, "Oh, you gonna go fight people?" I said, "No, honey. Mommy's not going to fight anybody. She's just going to talk about God." Oh, okay.
So, how do you encourage membership? I mean, what's kind of the benefits of membership?
I tell people this. I say, look, if you call this your church home and you support us and you want to be on our team, then you ought to become a member. I don't talk to them about, and you get to vote, you know what I mean? Or you get to this. They don't care about that. I just tell people, look, if you call this your church home, make it official. That's all membership really is to me. Make it official. And then when we do the membership class, we get into what that looks like. You know what I mean? And, you know, people can kind of decide, you know, whether they want to do that or not. But I tell people, look, I look at it as, you know, you're officially on our team. You know, this is your home, and we're going to celebrate that. And so that's how we kind of pitch it to people and what we talk about. And, you know, most people are like, yeah, this is my church home, and I want to support the work that we're doing. I want to support your vision and what we're trying to do. And so, yeah, put me on the team, man. Put me on the team. I would love to do that. And, again, you know, the reason why behind it is so, so important. And to this culture, you know, they want more than just, they don't want to be on just member for sake of membership, you know what I mean? Or to hear, well, I get to pay dues or tithes or whatever, you know what I mean? They want to know, it's like almost like if they're in that community circle and I really want them to feel like they're part of the core of that community, that's where membership is at. And that's an easy sell for anybody, because who doesn't want to be part of a community? You know what I mean? Who doesn't want to be part of the team? So, anybody else?
Just to share something with you, we at Pinecrest Camp have a new pastor, Jim Dickerson.
Yeah.
And just a couple of weeks ago, we talked about doing this very thing that you spent the evening talking to us about.
Yeah.
With all my notes that I've taken, I'm sure that we'll be able to do a better job.
Yeah.
I want your phone number.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we have to look at everything and ask the question, why? Why do we do Sunday school? Why do we, you know, my dad, he was a pastor at New Life Church on this district for a long time, Brian Davis. He's in Topeka now. And he called me. His youth pastor just went on to be a senior pastor. And he said, man, I got all these volunteers, or I don't have many volunteers in youth, and they're doing three youth services. They're doing youth Sunday school, youth service Sunday night, youth service Wednesday night, and then a small groups throughout the week. And it's so much for these volunteers to handle. And I said, so tell me something. Why are you having two youth services every week when they're having church on Sunday morning? Why are you doing small groups and Sunday school? Like, you have like six times a week where kids are learning about God, which is great. I get it, but isn't that a little overload, or what's the reason behind that? Tell me the why behind why you have to have so many youth services. Are they just not getting it the first two times, or what? You know, like, or why all learning environments? Is there an environment where they're serving and they're putting to work what they're doing? You know what I mean? Like, why? And he's like, I can't tell you, but I'm going to go ask him. I said, yeah, you know what I mean? I mean, why? Why are we doing that? When we planted Anchored Hope, do we need Sunday night service? Why would we have another service 4 hours later? You know what I mean? Are we not going to get it done? Was it not good enough the first time? You know, I don't know. For us, you know, not to each his own, but why do we need to do that again? We don't feel like we do, and it would cost extra money to rent the facility again, and we have to set up and tear down again. Okay, so we're not going to do Sunday night service. Okay, yeah, that's how we came up, because there's a why behind the what that we're doing. And I think we all have to sit down and ask ourselves that. You know, why are we doing VBS? Are we just doing it because every summer we've done VBS? Why are we doing it? You know, ask ourselves all of these questions, why behind the what? And we're doing that right now. We do some great community events, but we're reading right now Toxic Charity with this learning environment. And it's teaching us about how the right way is to really, truly help the poor and the homeless and the hungry. And we're looking at, okay, does that principle match up with this event? Why are we doing this event? Is that really helping? And I think some of them aren't. So we're going, okay, well, that's a great event where people cheer us on and love us, and they think it's the coolest thing on earth, and it goes well. It's a great event. But I don't think it's accomplishing what we really, truly want to accomplish. So I think we might need to cut it. Okay. And a lot of people go, oh, but it's such a cool event. Yeah, but it's not helping us do this. And this is what we're about. So why are we doing it? So,
you guys want to share? I've been in a lot of churches throughout my life. 32 years old, and I got involved with drugs, and I got tattoos on the water on my body.
Me too.
Cool.
Just the second one, yeah, not the first one. No.
But you know, a lot of churches kind of look down on me, you know, and drug habits, going to jail, stuff like that. Yeah, I just wanted to share something about the Nazarene faith that once, I remember the first day I walked in, and I was hung over from the day before, and they walked me, they put me right on, you know, the children ministry, you know, serving them on Wednesday night, you know, with my hand, and I eventually fell in love with my beautiful wife, Stacy, and got married and everything. I just want to say that, you know, I've been going religiously for the past 2 years to the church well, and there's something about the Nazarene faith that where you first come in, you feel like an outsider, you bring it right in.
Yeah.
I never had that core value as a home church. I remember just recently, and since then, you know, I got a call of ministry, and you know, I had hung up with alcohol while I'm going to Teen Challenge, but I just want to share that there's something about the Nazarene church that welcomes you and transforms your life.
Yeah.
Different things, they don't look at you,
yeah,
from your outside appearance. That's what I like about it.
Yeah.
I never had a home church.
Yeah. And that's a church who intended to do that. You know what I mean? And that's the thing, is to have a plan to do that. You know what I mean? To where somebody walks in, what's our plan here? You know what I mean? Are we going to reject them? Are we going to not talk to them? Or are we going to embrace them?
Right.
You got to have a plan for that, and you got to have a strategy for it, and be ready for it, because any of that can happen. And that just takes, it's hard for a lot of people, because when you start to think about it, you understand how much organization it actually takes, because you do have to sit down and you have to think through it. Right now, me and my staff, we're working on what I'm calling a church playbook. And right now, so far, it's a 60-page document. And it's just a list of what we're doing, how we're doing it, why we're doing it. You know what I mean? Somebody wants to come and sell a product in the lobby. Why would we tell them no? There's a reason. You know what I mean? Stuff like that. We just have to start thinking through those things. And we have to, too, because there's a lot of things, too. There's safety procedures we have to start thinking about, you know? There's a lot of stuff with our kids and our youth and precautions we all need to take. That all, too, it takes thinking through it, and it takes being organized, and it's understanding strategy. I think we're holding something too precious in our hands to not care for it right, and that's just people's lives, and so we have to do that. Let me pray for us real quick, and if any of you guys want to stick around and have questions for me or want to get my number or anything, give me a holler, but let me pray for us. God, I thank you so much for our conversation today. I thank you for being with us and for guiding us through this. God, I pray for all these people, their churches, their leadership, their pastors, that you would help them to discover what it is your vision for them is. Help them discover the why behind the what and their strategy. Help them to discover the right markers and the right mountaintops that you want them to strive and you want them to shoot for, Lord. I pray that you would be with us the rest of the day. Just continue to guide us and speak to our hearts and our lives. Help us to have a great lunch and some great fellowship with our other brothers and sisters in Christ, Lord. In your name I pray. Amen. Well, thanks, guys, for coming. Josh Veach over here is going to be in 205 later talking about mission, message, and media as well. So if you want to check him out this afternoon, he'll be over there. Hope you guys have a great rest of the day.
Thank you. I'm going to go.